Okay, let's see. Active lifestyle, yes, check. Non-smoker, well, for a while now, check. Balanced diet, well, we try, check. These things, they're all important factors in staying physically, mentally healthy. This idea of diet as a part of the treatment of mental disorder, but of enriching mental health, that's the thing which perhaps intuitively we think might be true. It's a thing, though, which doesn't have a lot of actual science around it. There is now new research that answers the question, if I improve my diet, will my mood improve? That research is the aptly named SMILE trial. Now, to fill us in, Dr. Felice Jacka, director of the Food and Mood Centre at Deakin University in Geelong in Victoria. Sarah Keeble joins us too in Brisbane. Now, she was a participant in that SMILE trial. Felice, this is quite a substantial undertaking. It's a fair bit of time and a fair bit of stuff went into this trial.
Well, that's right. It took years, really, but it built on many, many years of what we call observational data. So linking diet quality to the risk for depression, and we've seen that across countries, across cultures, and very importantly, across age groups. But of course, correlation doesn't equal causation. So you need to actually do a trial where you change diet in people with depression to see whether it has an impact on their mental health. And that's what we did.
Wow. And Sarah, you were one of those people. Your diet before this trial and your state of mental well-being?
My diet was non-existent. I pretty much lived on coffee, wine, cigarettes, just dodgy food, nothing. I didn't eat a lot of processed food, but I just didn't eat. That was my main thing.
Okay.
And I've suffered from depression for a long, long time, and I was pretty low at this stage. And I was lying in bed and I just went, no, I can't do this anymore. This is not the way you should be living. I need to do something. So, yeah.
So you'd come to a bit of a decision there before embarking on the trial itself.
Exactly. I was looking for something that's going to help me. I've done the medication. I've done the talking therapy. I did all that. And
okay.
It was a feeling within. It was just this, people say a black cloud or, you know, something hanging over their heads. And it was something that was just suppressing my mood, something that was just suppressing my motivation, everything. So, yeah, I was in a pretty bad way.
So, Felice, how typical is Sarah of the people who were engaged in the trial?
Well, we recruited people on the basis of them having clinical depression. And the symptoms that Sarah describes are pretty typical. So with depression, you have a low mood. You often have a lack of interest or pleasure in things that you would normally enjoy. You often have fatigue and a lack of motivation, but also difficulties in making decisions, difficulties in planning. And often, you know, your appetite is affected so that you don't feel like eating. So these are fairly typical symptoms with major depressive disorder.
So what did you do?
So with our randomized control trial, what we did was pretty simple, really. We recruited people who had clinical depression, and we randomly assigned them to get either social support, which is something that we already know is helpful for people with depression, or dietetic support with a dietitian. And the dietitian, and both of these went for 3 months, and the dietitian worked with those in the dietary group to gradually make feasible and achievable changes to their diet. So that meant gradually working with them to set goals for things like if they're eating a lot of white flour or pizza, white bread, that sort of thing, swapping over to whole grain and sourdough and rye and those sorts of things, increasing the amount of fruit and vegetables in their diet, very important, increasing the legumes, so that's your chickpeas and lentils and beans, very important sources of fiber, including fish in the diet for those long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, using olive oil for all of the cooking and everything else, those monounsaturated fats we know are really helpful for the brain and the body, and including nuts and seeds in the diet. But also, very importantly, at the same time, reducing the intake of junk and processed foods.
Right. That's quite substantial. And Sarah, you've already described to us your coffee and wine diet before the trial.
Just fabulous.
what did you end up eating with that dietetic assistance?
At this stage, I couldn't think what I had to eat. I knew I had to eat well, and I tried to eat well. I tried to have, you know, I'd cook food for the family, and I just couldn't do it. So I needed that help, that support. That's what I found was really good. So then, you know, I started having the three meals a day and breakfast, lunch and dinner. And I started having whole grains like oats and seeds for breakfast and, you know, just the vegetables and salads for lunch and things for dinner. And I just, it was amazing the transformation. Even my family say that.
Describe that transformation for us.
I was enthusiastic. I was motivated. I sort of would feel lighter. I'd feel that black cloud was, I felt that lifting. So
how extraordinary.
It was wonderful.
Was that quick? Was it a fairly instant outcome?
Couple of weeks, yeah. So, you know, that's been a couple of years now, and the journey I've been on, you know, I can now pinpoint what I can and cannot eat. You know, I'm very interested and very passionate about this subject and how different foods can affect your different moods and stuff like that. When I'm having a down day, because I still get them, I look at what I've been eating and all that sort of stuff, and I adjust my diet. So it's... Diet is so important. It's unreal.
So if you're having a bit of a down day, what's something that really sorts that out for you?
So yesterday it was funny because I thought to myself, I was feeling really drained. I'm training for a big walking event and I walked the night before and I thought, oh my goodness, I can't do this at the moment. I'm not feeling right. And I looked at my diet and realised I hadn't drunk enough water and I had been eating a fair bit of bread. So I adjusted that and just had a nice big salad with nuts and seeds and all that raw vegetables. And yeah, I feel a lot better this morning.
It's extraordinary, Felice, isn't it? I mean, getting in tune with the needs of your body sounds a simple thing, but it's there's so many barriers there for so many people.
Well, you know what I find is really intriguing is that I've over the years spoken to vets and people who work in animal husbandry. And when I talk about what I do, they say, but surely that's obvious. They say, if you are looking after, you know, whether it's pigs or sheep or goats or cattle or what have you, and you have a behavioural problem with those animals, say the pigs are biting each other's tails or whatever, what you do is you make minor adjustments to their diet and it has a profound influence on their behaviour. So this is incredibly well known in vet science. Why on earth would humans be any different? So this makes all sorts of sense, and our increasing understanding about the role of the gut in mental and brain health as well as physical health,
yes,
and the microbiota that live in the gut, the bacteria, now their role is to break down dietary fibre, and dietary fibre is in all those things, the legumes, whole grains, plant foods. And when they do that, they produce these metabolites, and these metabolites interact with every cell in your body. They do all sorts of things. They control body weight and your immune function and the health of your brain. Now, what we know is that you can change the microbiota in your gut and what they do within days by changing your diet. So you can have a profound impact on your health very quickly by reducing the things that the microbiota don't like, which is the junk and processed foods, things with artificial sugars and emulsifiers and refined carbohydrates, and increasing the foods that they do like, which is all the fibrous foods, you can have a profound impact on your health in a very short time frame.
Which is a funny thing because we get caught in so many cycles and there are so many pressures on us to behave in certain ways, but often people will describe what they might refer to as sort of comfort eating as eating really bad food.
What we know from animal studies is that when you eat particularly sweet foods, it does actually reduce the stress response. In the same way that cigarettes or alcohol or whatever have this short-term lift to your mood or they calm you down or what have you, but the long-term result is the opposite. It's the same with food. Yep. But the other thing too is, and I think that this is a major problem, we now have across the world, because of the influence of big food and industry, unhealthy diet is now the leading cause of early death in men across the globe and number two in women. So unhealthy diet is the main killer because of the changes to our food environment. But unfortunately, we've been telling people for decades not to eat certain foods and to eat a certain way, and it hasn't cut through. There's a number of reasons for that. One is that there's a big focus on obesity. Now, the problem is that once people are obese, it's very difficult to reverse. So people give up and they think, well, it doesn't matter. I can't lose weight, so I'll just keep eating badly. What we know is that the impact on the brain, it's about nutrient density. It's not about weight. So that's one thing. People also think, oh, it's off in the future. I might get diabetes one day or a heart attack. I won't worry about it. But if you know that your mental and brain health and your ability to learn and remember and that of your children is affected very, very quickly by what's eaten, I think that that might have an impact on how people think about food. And if you recognise that poor diet, leading killer across middle and high income countries, mental disorders account for the leading global burden of disability, we've had no new treatments for depression for decades, the fact that these two things are linked is incredibly important.
What would you say to people, Sarah, you know, to bridge that gap for them, to make that shift? How do you start?
I started by just eating. Basically, which was really handy. Yeah, exactly. It was, well, at that stage, it was one step at a time. And now, over the past couple of years, I've been able to keep a food diary, look at my mood when I've eaten things, be in tune with your body. It became my new obsession. My family are over it. But at the same time, I have just recently actually had blood tests, and my doctor was like very impressed that my cholesterol's gone down.
Nice.
My iron levels are gone. All my levels are good. My cardiovascular risk is 1%.
Well, thanks both. And tremendous to hear, Sarah, of your tale of success there. That is Sarah Keeble, a SMILE trial participant, and Dr. Felice Jacka, director of the Food and Mood Centre at Deakin University. Her new book, just out and on all this stuff, is called Brain Changer. This is Blueprint here on RN.